This is an interview of Tommy Brown for the Oral History Committee of the Society for American Baseball Research, being conducted on October 10, 1994, at the Browns' residence in Brentwood, Tennessee, by Al Quimby. Tommy, your first appearance in the major leagues was on August 3, 1944, and you were 16 years, 7 months, and 27 days old, which is the second youngest player to ever appear in major leagues and the youngest position player. Did you have any minor league experience before this appearance?
Well, after spring training, I went down to Class B. That was Newport News. And I was down there for 2 months, I think it was, in 1997. I was called up to the Dodgers. Played shortstop.
How far had you been in high school?
I went to the ninth grade.
To the ninth grade. And who discovered you as a baseball player? How were you discovered for the Dodgers?
Well, they had a tryout down there at Ebbets Field. And I really wasn't supposed to go for the tryout. I went with a neighbor. And as I was online, they put a number on my back. And I worked out. And in fact, they gave me spikes and a glove to work out with. And I went there for 2 days, and of course I was 15 back then. And after the workouts, I was called in December of 1943 to sign a contract with the Dodgers.
The neighbor that you went with, did he end up signing a contract?
No, he didn't.
He didn't make it, huh?
No. So. I was just home, and he asked me to go with him. For a tryout, you know, just sit in the stands or something. But they had to put a number on my back. Okay.
But you were called up from Class B then?
Class B, 1944.
What kind of a year were you having at Newport News when you were called up?
I was leading the league in triples, and I was hitting .297. And, of course, Snyder was down there, and Hodges. We were all down at the same time.
Were you called up to fill anybody's position in particular? Had they had an injury, or what was the reason that you were called?
Bobby Bregan, he's an ordinary catcher, and he was playing shortstop, and he got hurt. And so I was having a pretty good year, and they called me right up to play shortstop.
Did you go back to the minors at all then during your major league career?
I finished out the 1944 season with the Dodgers. And after spring training in 1945, I went down to St. Paul. That's American Association, AAA, I think it was. And I was down there for a little over 2 months and called back. Ralph Branca and myself both called back.
How about after your major league career? Did you go to the minors after your major league career was over?
In 1954. I went down to Pacific Coast League, played for the Los Angeles Angels. That was a fun team for Chicago Cubs. And I was down there for 2 years, and then Nashville down here bought my contract, and I finished up my career here.
So you played at Old Solfordell here in Nashville?
Right, 5 years.
5 years?
5 years.
Did you ever play in the famous right field?
No, that was called a dump down there, and I'm glad I didn't.
You are the youngest player to ever hit a home run in the major leagues. How old were you when...
I was 17. I broke 1901, I forgot his name right now, I've got it down on the sheet.
Can you tell us a little bit about when and where you hit this home run, and who was pitching?
I hit it August the 20th, 1945, against Pittsburgh, and the pitcher was Preacherell.
Was it in Ebbets Field or in Forbes Field in Pittsburgh?
Ebbets Field.
Do you remember anything about the type of pitch that Preacherell threw you that you hit for your first home run?
Oh, it was definitely a fastball. It was sort of middle of the plate and up a little bit, and hit in the upper deck.
What was the score?
It was, at that time, Pittsburgh had 9-0, And, of course, the one I hit it off, Preacher Rowe, he joined our ball club in, I guess, 1947, 48. And I always bugged him about it. You know, I hit a home run off you. He said, I was just trying to get the ball over, see how far you can hit one.
Did Brooklyn ever, was Brooklyn ever able to tie the score or win that game, or was it, were they stay behind all the way?
Oh, we behind. We won. We lost 11-1 that game.
11-1. And on that occasion, were you pinch hitting, or had you played the whole game?
No, I played the whole game. I played shortstop.
Shortstop. Can you remember your first hit in the major leagues? When that occurred, and who was pitching?
First hit I got as soon as I joined the ball club in 1944. Played a doubleheader against Chicago. In the first game, I got my first hit off Bob Chipman. And in the second game of the doubleheader, I got two off Claude Pascal.
Were they all singles?
Got one double in the second game in the single.
Did Brooklyn win either of those two games?
No, we lost the doubleheader.
You lost both games. And what positions did you play in each game?
I played shortstop both games.
Now, Joe Nuxall is the youngest player to ever appear in the major leagues. He also appeared in 1944 as a pitcher for Cincinnati and was immediately sent down. When he came back to the major leagues in 1952, did you ever bat against Joe?
I hit against Joe. I had pretty good luck with him.
Did they make much at the time about the fact that the youngest position player and the youngest pitcher were facing each other? Was that a subject of any newspaper articles or interviews?
I remember it was in the paper a few times about the youngest and next youngest to play against each other.
The home run that was your first home run, can you recall anything special about what Red Barber did on that occasion?
Old Gold was a sponsor down there, Red Barber. And, of course, I didn't want to hit a home run. They sent a carton of Old Gold down the screen. And when I hit my first home run, he did the same thing, and the bat boy brought it over to me in the dugout after I hit the home run. And DeRosa immediately got up and took the carton away from me. He said, "You're too young to smoke," in a joking way. But I got it back.
Do you feel that you got your chance at Major League Baseball at age 16 because of World War II?
Oh, definitely. Most of the, regulars were in the service back then. And any other time, I would be down in mines 2 to 3 years, be ready. In fact, I really, when I was called up in 44 at the age of 16, I didn't want to go. I know I wasn't ready for it and everything, but I'm not the boss. Mr. Ricky's the boss.
Had you lived all your life in Brooklyn up till that time?
Brooklyn, yes.
How did it feel playing in front of the home folks?
Well, it was, a dream come true. I thought there was a lot of pressure on me. And I remember coming home from school. The first thing I ever done was turn the radio on, listen to the Dodger game, and here I am playing with the men I used to keep a box score on.
That must have been quite a thrill.
It was great.
From 1945 to 1950, when you were with the Dodgers, each of those years, they were in pennant races.
Right.
Were you able to play in many of the key games down the stretch?
I played in a lot of them. Of course, I was the number one pinch hitter for them. And I had some good years, 291, 297. And like I said, I was the number one pinch hitter. Hit a lot of home runs pitching. And, of course, when Jackie got hurt, I played regular.
What year was that?
I think that was 1948. Jackie come up then. I was hitting fourth for him.
When you were with the Dodgers, they were in two World Series, 1947 and 1949. Did you play in the 47 World Series?
I didn't get into the game in 47.
How about the 49?
49, I took a pinch hit twice.
Do you remember which game and the pitchers and the circumstances?
The two pitchers I hit against, pinch hit against, was Eddie Lopat and Speck Shea.
Do you remember how you did on those occasions?
I popped out against Spec Shea and hit a line drive off Eddie Lobat.
Do you remember which game those were that you...
I really don't know.
The 1947 World Series is the one that is memorable to a lot of people because of the catch that Al Gianfrido made off Joe DiMaggio in Game 6 and Bill Bevan's attempt to pitch a no-hitter in Game 4 that was broken up by Cookie Lavigueiro. Mm-hmm. Were you able to see Gianfrido's catch from your position on the bench?
Oh, I've seen it all the way.
What went through your mind when he made that? First of all, when the ball was hit, did you think he had a chance to catch it?
I didn't think he had a chance to catch it. I thought it was a home run that DiMaggio hit. And he just turned his back over there and made a complete circle on the turn with his hat. It fell off and everything else and backhanded the ball. It would have been a home run. And that's the only time I've seen DiMaggio kick the dirt.
You saw him kick the dirt.
He thought it was out.
The pinch hit that Cookie Lavigueiro got, what was the talk there on the bench before he went up to the plate? What was going through your mind and everybody else's mind about this potential no-hitter?
Well, you know, I didn't give us much chance over the way he was pitching. And on the hit Lavigueiro got, the ball looked like a ball on the outside of the plate over there, and he hit a line drive off the ball in right field. Scored two runs, and we beat him 2-1.
Were you hoping that you'd get a chance to pitch him?
I really thought, being I was the number one pinch hitter. Of course, I took his old number, number 5. We were real good friends, Lavigueiro and I. He was my favorite ball player outside of DiMaggio.
What was there a big difference between those pennant-winning Dodger teams and the pennant-winning Yankee teams back then in the way they approached the game of baseball?
Well, I guess the our ball club over there, from 47 on over there, well, even 46, we had a bunch of class men on our ball club. We were in a pennant race every year. And Yankees were more getting a job done quiet way, where we had a lot more fun, I guess, back then.
Who... During your period of time in the National League, of course, all your career was in the National League, who was the toughest or among the toughest pitchers that you had to bat against?
Oh, I guess Warren Spahn over there and with Boston back then. And from St. Louis, it was Bikin. Because they had a great pitching staff, the Cardinals back then. And but Bikin over there was screwball, and he had so many pitchers. But I think Spahn was the toughest.
Even though he was a left-hander,
even
and you
though
were right,
left-handed.
Did you ever get any hits off of Spahn?
Yes, I did. I hit a few home runs off him, but I was out more than I hit.
Who were the, in your opinion, back then? Who was the best hitter in the late 40s in the National League?
Oh, I guess Musial was.
And
Sam Musial was great. But I think the best all-around ball player I've seen in the National League was Willie Mays. And if I had to win one game, that's who I'd build my ball club around.
How many years did you see him?
I've seen him about 3 years.
How would you compare him as a center fielder with Duke Snider, who was the center fielder on the teams you played for?
Oh, Duke was a great ball player. It's hard to separate them, but with Mays, he had the power too, but he had a lot more speed. He beat you in a lot of different ways. With Snider was, you know, long ball hitter, power hitter.
Now, you had 5 different managers in the major leagues. You had Leo DeRocher was your first manager, then Bert Schotten, and Chuck Dressen at Brooklyn, and then when you went to Philadelphia in 1951, it was Eddie Sawyer, and you finished up with Phil Cabaretta at Chicago. How did these five men differ? Were there big differences in the way they handled ball clubs, how they handled pitching staffs, how they handled position players?
Well, I think the toughest manager, and the fairest, I believe, of all, because there's a lot to say about him, there, I think DeRozier.
Really?
I think DeRozier. He didn't have any favorites. You had to play ball for him his way. And that's the only way he knew how to play. If he was a 400 hitter, he treated the same way as a 200 hitter.
How did he treat a 16-year-old?
Well, he treated me great. I was just like a son to him. And he's the one who gave me, you know, my nickname and everything.
How did he give you the nickname of Buckshot?
Well, he nicknamed me Buckshot when I first got there and everything. And, of course, you know how Buckshot is. You fire the shotgun over there and it goes straight for a while. But that's how my arm was. It was powerful, but I didn't know. Buckshot gets out there and scatters, and that's how my arm was. Right, left, high, low. But he always told me to just keep on throwing. And it came around.
Was there a big change on the Dodgers when Bert Schotten became the manager?
Bert was sort of a Connie Mack.
Never wore a uniform.
Never wore a uniform, and he had a scorecard and everything. He had his own, in a quiet way. But you win or lose, it was the same way. He wasn't no rah-rah.
How was Chuck Gressen when he... A lot of people didn't particularly like him. What was the feeling on the Dodgers when he became
Charlie was... well, it's hard to describe him. He had the best mind of all the managers, though.
Really?
As far as pitching, he knew everything about baseball. Pitching, pinch hitting, and it was a different attitude, I think, on the ball club when Gresson came.
Why is that?
Well, if you 240 hitter, 250 hitter, he expect you hit 240 and 250, and that was the only way he managed. And he'd go along. I think he went a lot longer with veteran ball players.
Did he play a set lineup more than the others?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Because I liked Charlie Gresson over there. He helped me a lot.
In what ways?
In ways. In fact, before the ball games and everything, he showed me different things, and he hit a lot of ground balls to me. And when I went out to the outfield, he had somebody, you know, took me under his wing a lot.
He had a reputation of being an expert at stealing signs. Was that an accurate reputation, or is that something that's more folklore?
No, that everything about that is true.
How did he do it?
He just watched and picked them right up. He's one of the smartest men in baseball, like I said.
Did he ever tell his secrets?
No, he didn't.
Do you have any idea how he did it?
No, I didn't. He just said he just knew when you pick up a steal sign, a hit and run sign. He says, "There he goes," and he'd tell the catcher, "Pitch out on a certain hit and run." And sure enough,
who was he picking them up from? The third base coach or the manager in the dugout across the way? Or?
Well, I believe the relay from the manager to the third base coach. He'd pick him up either way, but he never gave secrets away.
Do you think that contributed to many Dodger victories?
A lot. A lot. A lot of one-run games were won.
Can you tell me a little bit about what kind of a manager and what kind of a person Eddie Sawyer was?
Eddie Sawyer was more like a father manager. Very, very quiet. It was sort of like a Bert Schotten thing over the, more or less. And I believe he relied on his coaches more than himself.
Who were his coaches? Benny Bengal, maybe?
Bengal, right. And he had I just can't think of his name. Old-time ball player right now. Doesn't come to me. But I believe he relied on his coaches more than himself.
How about Phil Cavaretto? How did he compare with, say, DeRozier and Gresson?
Well, he's from the old school, old Phil. He was sort of like DeRozier. and fire every manager and get the best out of your ball club. Being in play, he was always a hustler, and that's the way you had to play for him, too. He was sort of a devotion man.
If, of the five managers that you played for, if you had to pick one to win one game, who would it have been?
Well, it's really tough, but I'd have to say Charlie Dressen.
Why was that? Because of his ability to steal signs? Or
not the signs. Like I said before, he had a great baseball mind. Not only that, he was the boss man, and he knew how to handle pitching.
Did you watch the recent series on television called Baseball by Ken Burns?
Yes, I did.
Did you watch all of the shows? Did you see the one in particular about the 1940s?
1940, when it was very interesting. It was pretty accurate about Robinson breaking the color barrier, because I played with Jackie. And Jackie, back in 47 when he joined our ball club, there was so much pressure on him. And it takes a man to take all that. And, of course, he did. And there was a little dissension when he joined our ball club. Southern players, and I don't mind saying it, Stanky and Dixie Walker, being from the South, being from Mobile over there. It was still the South against the North and everything else like that. Of course, I didn't like it because he's a man. The color didn't bother me.
You didn't like the dissension.
I didn't like the dissension on it. Like, we go out on a road to play Cincinnati or Chicago. Jackie had to stay downtown in a different motel. And being a young kid, I couldn't realize that. And I felt bad about it. I'm glad I was a teammate with Jackie. Showed what it takes to be a man. He took everything on the road that they handed out, bringing up the color issue of it.
Where was the toughest place for him on the road?
I think Pittsburgh. That's when I remember real well his first series in there. They put the Black Cats on the field and everything. He sort of just laughed about it and everything. And Cincinnati, they were pretty rough on him, but by the end of the year over there, they knew he was the ball player.
How did things change, say, from 1948 on? Did things change then in those other towns and everything when the Dodgers came to town?
Oh, yeah, a lot better. You know, I think 48, when they made the rule over there, he stood at the same hotels as we did, see? And I think the biggest thing that helped Jackie over there when we got Roy Campanella and Don Newcomb, we had it. He wasn't alone anymore.
I understand you were close friends with both Jackie and Campy.
Very close friends. In fact, Roy Campanella and I, we warmed up every day. And he wouldn't warm up with anybody else but me. And if I was a little late, he'd get all over me. And I was sort of like a good luck charm to Campy. We were great friends.
Did you have much contact after your career was over and their careers were over with many of the Dodger ballplayers?
I talked to them on phone and I'd meet them at card shows. Don Newcomb, of course, he does a lot of work for alcoholics today. And I played in a golf tournament, Ted Rhodes golf course. He comes up every year for that. And I talked to him. I've seen Carl Erskine a lot. And I keep in touch.
Did you ever get invited to any old-timers games?
Quite a bit.
Have you been able to play in this?
I haven't. Not much outside of Nashville head. Major leagues against minor league teams.
Now, you played for three different franchises, the Dodgers, Phillies, and the Cubs. How did those franchises differ back during the late 40s and early 50s? Was there a difference in the way their scouting systems work, their approach to the game, their spring trainings, etc.?
I think the Dodgers had the best overall, the way they handled ball play. The farm system was super. I believe that ever since when Branch Rickey took over, that he changed the whole organization. It was strictly baseball. And as far as the three that I played for, I think the Dodgers were the most helpful to me.
Now you joined the Phillies. Now you joined the Phillies approximately midway through the 1951 season, and that was the year after they had won the pennant. Did they feel that they were going to repeat in 51?
There wasn't much talk about it. It was just a quiet clubhouse. There was no rah-rahs and everything like that. It was more of the. It was not the closeness of the Dodgers like we expect them every year, because we had the ball club. But I think after they won the pennant in 50, there was much talk in Philadelphia dugout or in clubhouse about repeating.
Who were their team leaders?
Richie Ashburn, the center field, and Granny Hamlin, shortstop.
They finished the season in fifth place, 23 and a half games out. When you joined them, where were they in the pennant race? Were they?
I think we were pretty close.
Pretty close. Who were you traded to for when Brooklyn sent you to Philadelphia?
When I went to Philadelphia, I went for Dick Whitman. Dodger received outfield Dick Whitman, and Dodgers had to pay cash. I think it was Philly had to pay $70,000, I think it was, in that neighborhood for me.
Were you disappointed to be in being traded, or did you feel you would have more chance to play?
Well, I really looked at it in both ways, you know, the closeness of my teammates. But in another way, I got a chance to play. I wanted to play regular.
Then the next season, you were traded to the Cubs.
Right.
Was that during the season or during the off season?
It was the early part of the 52,
of
I think.
52. And who were you traded for at that time?
I just went for cash. Went for money. And I think that's one of the best years I had was in 52. I think I hit 303 and played shortstop for him. I played a little outfield for him, too.
How did you compare playing in Wrigley Field as opposed to Ebbets Field, the two very famous and fairly small ballparks? Which was your favorite?
Well, Ebbets, there's no place like Ebbets Field, but when I went to Chicago over there and playing all day games, see, there was no night games back then. I mean, they didn't have no lights, and it seemed funny playing home games to be true at 3:30 in the afternoon. You had a lot of time on your hands. But it was a great ballpark, Wrigley Field.
Now, at the end of the 1953 season, the Cubs sent you to the minor leagues. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about your next few years in the minor leagues?
Well, when I joined the Los Angeles Angels back then, Pacific Coast League, I played for a manager named Sweeney, and a lot of ex-Dodgers were on the ball club. Bruce Edwards, Joe Hatton, Gene Mock, he played second base, but I played short, and a few other Dodgers. Well, it was back then, you know, when I played with Chicago, it was like an ex-Dodger team, and it was Dee Fondy, and I enjoyed it right down there.
How many years did you play in the Pacific Coast League?
I played 2 years.
And as I understand it, they usually played about 180, 190 games a season?
About 178 games.
And then, did you stay in the Pacific Coast League to the end of your career, or did you play elsewhere in the minor leagues?
No, after I left the Angels down at Pacific Coast League, I was brought by Nashville, Tennessee, played third base for the Vols, Nashville, Tennessee. And I finished up my career here.
Did any of the Nashville players end up in the major leagues that you played with?
There was quite a bit. There was Jimmy O'Toole and Maloney.
Jim Maloney.
Two great pitchers. And of course, they were youngsters, and they were great.
What was the high point of your major league career?
I think it was 1950. I guess that's most outstanding in my baseball career. I hit 3 homers in 1 game.
And where was that?
That was in Ebbets Field.
Against?
Against Chicago Cubs.
Were they all off the same pitcher?
No, I hit 2 old Paul Minna, and I hit 1 off Walt Duvall.
How did the game end?
Well, as far as I was concerned, I had a good day. I had 1-4-4, but drove in all the 7 runs, but we got beat 9-7.
And you drove in all 7 Brooklyn runs?
7 runs, right.
What was the low point of your major league career? Did you have any low points?
I think the lowest point in my career, I guess it was the World Series, not playing a game.
Have you followed baseball closely since you left the game?
Quite a bit. I don't watch it much on TV anymore. I think there's a lot of difference when I played ball and back in that era and today.
What do you think the differences are?
I think it's the agents today. Back then, you had to talk for yourself. And today, you just can sit home over there. I guess it's the money issue today.
How do you feel that during this particular week we'd be watching either playoff games or World Series? What is your feeling on the stride? Do you have any particular side?
I'd rather be watching it. I'd rather be watching playoff World Series. It don't seem right, but it's out of hand today, and I think it's going to hurt baseball.
What was your top salary in the major leagues?
I think it was after the 1952 season when I hit 303 with Chicago, because my top salary was $14,500.
Who was the toughest general manager that you had to deal with as far as salaries were concerned?
Well, I think the biggest one, and always treated me like a son, was Branch Rickey.
Was he tough to deal with? Did he always get his way, or did he compromise with you?
I'd say 90% he'd get his way.
Were you sorry to see him leave Brooklyn?
Pardon me?
Were you sorry to see him leave as the general manager at Brooklyn?
Oh, I did. He was strictly baseball. He loved baseball, and he lived for it. And without him, they wouldn't have had the farm system like they got today. Vero Beach and everything, outstanding. And I really missed them.
How did you feel when the Dodgers left Brooklyn?
I think when I left Ebbets Field, moved out to the coast, was a real low point. And of course, there's no place like Brooklyn, though. The fans, playing the Giants at the Polo Ground, big rivalries. It didn't seem the same. Dodgers weren't the Dodgers anymore, as far as I was concerned. More turn Hollywood out there.
Do you still root for the Dodgers? Are they still the team that you root for through the years?
I don't root for them anymore.
Really?
I don't. Because I think it took part of your life away from you when I moved from there. And diehard fans and everything supported when you was in the last place. They packed the stadium. Just to see if you can win a game or so.
Is there any particular team that you've rooted for since you've been here in Nashville?
Well, I think more or less I root for Cardinals a lot and Cincinnati in National League.
Do you get to many of the local Sounds games and the Nashville Express games? Do you follow minor league baseball here?
Oh, quite a bit.
How do you feel baseball is different in the last, say, 15 to 20 years as opposed to when you played back in the late 40s and early 50s?
Well, I think in our era, playing in 40s and 50s over there, I think there was better ball players. The game has changed. Today, with the expansion teams and everything, spreading out then. Now, I don't believe the quality ball players is as good as they were back then.
Do you feel there's a difference in strategies? Is the game played different by the managers now as opposed to back then?
Oh, I think so. Of course, back then, no designated hitter in the American League. Today you can go longer with a pitcher. I think to see people making $1 million hitting 190, 200, it really hurts the game. Because back when I played, if you didn't hit 240 or better, and you had to be a shortstop or an infielder, second baseman, you was gone.
You mentioned playing shortstop and in the infield. Would you have liked to have played on AstroTurf?
Well, I don't know. If I was young. today, I believe that helped the hitters today. There's a lot of ground balls. It makes a difference between a 300 hitter and about 250 hitter.
A lot of singles become triples sometimes when they get to the outfield.
Sure, and hard hit ground balls today, no way. It's going to go through for a base hit. Help you average a lot.
If you were playing today, what manager would you like to play for?
I think there was only one manager I think DeRocher.
Of the current managers that we have in baseball today, who would you like to play for if you were a player right now?
Right now, I would like to play for Sparky Anderson with Detroit, baseball man. He's sort of a Charlie Dressing manager.
Now, you played all of the infield positions and outfield. What was your favorite position?
I think my favorite position was third base. I really wanted to be a third baseman because I knew well away when Pee Wee Reese come back over there, I didn't have a chance to play short because there's only one Pee Wee Reese. But third base, that was my position, really, with my arm and everything.
Who were the Dodger third basemen during the years you were there?
We had about four or five. We had Bruce Edwards come over there, and Spider Jorgensen, and then, of course, later on, Billy Cox come from Pittsburgh, and Bragan played over there, but that's a position I really wanted to play.
What outfield position did you play the most?
Left field.
Was there any particular left field in the National League that was tougher to play than any other?
I think center field is a tougher position because you had a lot of ground to cover out there and everything. And when they moved me to the outfield, you know, it took time.
Any particular ballpark that it was tough to play left field in?
I think Pittsburgh.
And why was that?
There were a lot of white shirts behind home plate, and seeing that screen out there. And it's hard to pick up a ball. And I'd say Pittsburgh and St. Louis are really tough.
If you had to do anything over again in your baseball career, would you do anything differently?
I don't think that. Baseball would be great to me. I would never change anything. It gave me security, gave me a good pension, and it was a dream come true for me.
Do you still ever get back to Brooklyn?
Oh, I'd love it. Well, all my people are there. I go at least once a year. In fact, I'm going to a card show in January up there. And Yogi Berra and everybody's going to be there. And a lot of my teammates are going to be there.
How often do you see your old teammates?
Well, a lot of times they come in town by phone. I've seen Carl Erskine and Don Newcomb at the Ted Rhodes Golf Course out here. They have a charity golf. I've seen quite a bit of them.
Are there any particular players from other teams that you're close to and have maintained contact with? Like Dick Sisler lives here in Nashville. Do you see much of him?
I see quite a bit of Dick Sisler. And we played together in Philadelphia. And he was my manager down here in Nashville. And we're real close.
How many times did you get thrown out of a game by an umpire when you were in the majors?
As far as I remember, it was twice, but the first time I got thrown out, it's outstanding. I think we were playing in Pittsburgh, and I didn't like the call third strike. Back then, Jock O'Connell was the umpire, home umpire, and I threw my bat up in the air, and umpire Jock O'Connell says, Tom, if that bat comes down, you're out of the ball game. And so I tried to reach for it before it hit the ground, but I never did. He said, you're gone. But It was sort of comical anyway. That's the first time I've been thrown out of the game.
Do you remember the second time?
The second time I had a fight with, in St. Louis. I think with, Slaughter. I was playing third base at the time, and he slid into third base and cut my shoe with his spikes. And he cut me up pretty good over there, and I sort of didn't like it. When he was still on the ground, we just wrestled, and they threw both of us out of the game, and that was the only two times.
Do you remember who the umpire was that time?
Beans Reardon.
I understand that in your first year, Mr. DeRocher played a trick on you. Can you tell us about that?
He sure did. After infield practice, we were getting ready to go out to my shortstop position for the game. He called me over. DeRocher called me over. He says, Tom, he says, I forgot the manager's name at the time, but he says, go and ask so-and-so for a key to the pitcher's box. I says, okay. I walked over to the other dugout, and I asked the manager. I says, Mr. DeRocher said that you got the key to the pitcher's box. He says, well, you tell Mr. DeRocher that it's all locked up and I can't give it to him right now. So I went back and I told DeRocher what he's told me. And I looked over there, and his manager and their dugout was laughing, and our dugout was laughing. I knew something was up. It was just a joke. There was no key to a pitcher's box. Oh, geez.
And what city was that in?
That was in Pittsburgh, too. I can't think of the name, manager.
When you came up as a 16-year-old, were there any particular Dodger ballplayers that kind of took you under their wing?
Oh, quite a bit. I think they was mostly the coaches, but the one that really, really, really helped me was Clyde Sukaford. He was the coach back then. And my roommate, Goody Rosen, played the outfield for Dodger back then. He was my roommate, helped me a lot. Archie Vaughn. Very, very helpful. In fact, they all helped me, really.
This concludes this tape.